Dan Lovallo. And we do have Senator Joe Markley. He represents the 16th Senatorial District, and that includes Cheshire, Prospect, Southington, Woolcott, and a portion of Waterbury. He's a ranking member of both the legislature's Human Services and Public Health Committees. He's a member of the Appropriations Committee and also a member of the Program Review and Investigations Committee. And he was the only state senator yesterday out of 36 in that chamber to vote against the state's tax package with Sikorsky. That said, we welcome Senator Joe Markley to Front and Center. Senator, hello.
Hello, Dan. A pleasure to be with you.
Well, the pleasure's always ours. And how about explaining to our audience why you voted against this package?
Well, of course, it's not because I want to see Sikorsky leave the state. There's a side of me that's glad that it was passed and they're staying. But I feel like what we're doing is short-term solutions that are not addressing the underlying problem. And the problem is, over many, many years, we've created a terrible business climate in Connecticut, and we're now reaping the problems that come with that. And instead of correcting the underlying problem, we're trying to deal with these companies one by one. And it's only going to encourage more of them to come to us and ask for money. And it's also, I believe, going to make the problem worse, because when the money we pay out to one, we've got to get from everybody else. And that's our problem. We can't keep spending money like this.
And I'll get back to that in just a moment, but I'm going to play devil's advocate a little bit. What do you say to a constituent in your district that perhaps has a small business which will benefit with some work from this Sikorsky deal?
Well, I'd say I want to do something that makes the atmosphere better for your business, as well as for Sikorsky, and that the fundamental, at a certain point, you have to decide whether you believe in the fundamental principle or not, that that the government should not be involved in trying to decide which businesses are worthy of support and which ones aren't, that that's a function of the market. And also that, you know, the big corporations have the connections and the clout to come in and get this public money. It's the small business that ends up having to pay the taxes that support that money. And a screw machine shop or a tool and die maker, somebody that's got a dozen or 50 people, is never going to get the kind of state subsidies that a company like Sikorsky or Jackson Labs or whatever gets. And you know, the Republicans like to say, when they vote against a deal like this, we shouldn't be picking winners and losers. In this case, I hope we picked a winner, but we're still doing it. It's like saying, I don't gamble, but I sure got a good horse in the fifth race, you know. If you don't think gambling is the answer, you shouldn't gamble. And if you don't think that public support of private companies is the answer, then we just shouldn't do it.
Because 14 of your Republican colleagues in that chamber did vote for this deal, Senator.
Oh, yes. No, I'm vividly aware of it. And I don't blame anybody for their vote on this. I understand the desperate nature of our problems and the desire to keep a great corporation like Sikorsky in Connecticut. But I do feel like once you start paying ransom, the people are just going to keep lining up. And the only corporations that are in a position to have the connections to get this kind of deal are the big corporations with the lobbyists up in Hartford and the close relationships with political leaders. The thousands of small companies, which really are the heart of our economy, are never going to receive benefits like this.
Now, we hear from the governor and the administration that it's a competitive market out there, state versus state, and there are red states out there that also offer these tax incentives. What would you say to that?
Well, I wish we were in a world where no one was doing it, first of all. And one of the things that I found, it's funny, I was just had the occasion to talk to a number of legislators, Republicans from other parts of the country, and the states that are doing the very best, the Texas and Tennessee and whatnot, are doing very little of this because they don't have to, Dan. They've got a good business climate, and they don't need to bribe people to come to their states. The states have a natural attraction. And, you know, that's what Connecticut once had. We didn't have to pay Igor Sikorsky to come to Stratford either. He looked out at the country and saw a place that had skilled labor and that had no income tax and a good situation, a good location, and he established a business here. We built up a great economy in Connecticut without public money. We destroyed it by bad public policy, by spending too much and taxing too much and regulating too much. The answer is not more big government, it's less big government.
Now, let's take it from the perspective you're talking about, that this is nothing more than a Band-Aid on a broken leg. Does it serve as an argument for the majority party, which loves this kind of approach, to not attack the root cause of the state's budget problems?
Yes, and I think as a matter of political strategy, I can understand why Republicans don't want to be seen as letting Sikorsky go. But once you start down the road, then you get to the Jackson Labs, and you get even to the ridiculous things like the New Haven tennis tournament that the state bought because we didn't want it to move to North Carolina. And it all is, you, once you abandon your principle, you're on a very slippery slope. I think we would be better off as a party to stand very firmly on exactly what we believe, go out and explain it to people, and try to convince them and run on it. And in the end, Dan, we got to get control, because the Democrats are not going to change their ways. The only answer is to elect a Republican majority that will follow Republican principles.
So if you could wave a magic wand in order to improve the state's business climate, what would you change?
Well, the taxes, above all, are the first thing. We simply have created a crushing tax burden because of the cost of our state government. And, you know, if I could travel in a time machine back 25 years, I'd stop the state income tax just as I was trying to do 25 years ago. On one hand, that was something that was an advantage to us relative to the other states in our region, a big advantage. And the other thing about it is it was a check on the growth of state spending, because they felt they could only raise the sales tax so far. Since we passed that income tax, we've averaged 7% growth in state spending every year for 25 years. You can't sustain that. You can't sustain that certainly with the kind of economy we've ended up with. And it's caught up with us. Our economy is in terrible shape. And I think we're past the tipping point. And because we've tipped, a lot of things are sliding out. These businesses are sliding out of the state, and our own residents and our young people. I was up at UConn not too long ago, a room full of seniors, and I said, how many of you expect to stay in Connecticut? And I think out of two dozen people, maybe two hands went up, and that's very discouraging.
Senator, could the state actually launch a program whereby it phases out the state income tax?
Well, it certainly could. It's amazing that for a state that's functioned with no income tax at all, it now accounts for approximately half of our total state revenue. So to get rid of it, once you start down the road of an addiction, you tend to need more and more of it as time goes on to get your fix. And it would be a long road to back away from it. But I'd love to see it done. I'll tell you, any tax that you can eliminate, if somebody came to me and said, well, let's get rid of the sales tax instead, I'd say fine. And of course, Yankee Institute has identified scores of taxes which cost more to collect than they bring in revenue. One reason I think there's such a multiplicity of taxes, Dan, is because it makes it harder for anyone to focus on any particular tax. If we could get it down to one big tax in the state, then I think we could work on moving that tax down. As it is now, when one spigot, you keep opening different spigots, so you never know exactly where the money's coming from.
What are some of the onerous taxes and regulations on business? What do you hear as you make the rounds?
Well, one thing that I would say is businesses, what do businesses want? Businesses want to be left alone. And businesses want stability, to know that what they pay this year is the same as going to be next year and the year after. And the regulations they have this year are going to be the same regulations next year. The easiest thing to do and the first thing to do is to stop moving in the wrong direction. Say, we're not going to raise any more taxes. We're not going to impose any regulations that we don't have to. I mean, obviously, there's changes in industries and so forth that require safety regulations, but as little as possible. And instead, what we've got under Governor Malloy and the Democratic leadership at both chambers is a desire to be first in the nation, to say, let's get the $15 an hour minimum wage, paid sick leave, family maternity leave, all these different things that they probably point to as saying Connecticut is the first or Connecticut is the only state. That's not helpful at a time when our business climate is already bad. And voters have an opportunity in not much more than a month to decide which direction they want to go in. And they've got to pay attention to how their legislators have been voting. If the Republicans could get control of one of the chambers, we at least could stop bad policies for 2 years. We could stop moving in the wrong direction, and then maybe in 2 years with a new governor, we could start moving in the right direction.
Senator, I don't know if you saw that CBIA survey of businesses, but the vast majority stated that if the state mandates through legislation a $15 per hour minimum wage, they would invest in robotics. I don't know if you saw that.
No, I didn't, but of course I'm not surprised. And the thing about the 50, again, I feel like the same thing I said about Sikorsky. I'm glad they're staying in the state. I just think that the underlying policy is bad. If we went to a $15 an hour minimum wage, I have no question that a certain number of people would benefit, and God bless them. But what you don't see is the jobs that would be destroyed, the jobs that would never be created because of that $15 an hour minimum wage. The laws of supply and demand are simple, and they are inexorable. And a company can say, at $11 an hour, it makes sense for me to create a new position. But at $15 an hour, I can't afford it. And that's an opportunity lost to a struggling unemployed person to get a job, to at least get his foot on the first rung of a ladder. And that's the trade-off. And, you know, one of the problems in politics is you see the positive effects. Sikorsky stays in Stratford, or you open Jackson Labs, and there's a photo op. But what you don't need to see is the destruction that the cost creates. That all that money that's been taken out of the economy that causes closings, but no one says that shoe store closed because of Jackson Labs. But that's what happens in the end.
Now, the Republicans recently introduced their package during this campaign, what they would do, and the Democrats countered, and they stated that the state's economy could improve, the state's atmosphere could improve without raising taxes. Do you believe that statement to be true, that the Democrats, if they maintain power, will not raise taxes?
No, I don't believe it, and they have already proven that they can't be trusted on this issue. Since I've been back in the legislature, Dan, we've had two enormous budget deficits, and both times we've responded with enormous tax increases. And both times, I said again, like talking about an addict, we've got to confront this spending problem sooner or later. Let's do it now. The longer we put it off, the harder it's going to be. Next year, when we go back into session, I think we're going to have a comparable deficit to the other two, something between maybe $1.5 to $2 billion deficit in a two-year budget. The Democrats have proven before that they're not willing to make the spending cuts, and these spending cuts are getting more and more difficult. If we had started on it 6 years ago, we could have used a scalpel, and now we're in the situation where we are going to make dramatic cuts and painful cuts in haste. And it's a very bad situation. But there's no choice. The first thing we should do is say taxes are not on the table. My expectation is the Democrats are going to say that right up till Election Day, and then they'll change their tune, just like Molloy did 2 years ago.
So where should we cut the budget? Where should we make these systemic changes rather than just going willy-nilly through the budget and cutting here, cutting there?
Well, I think I would break it down into three categories. I would say there are large projects that could be that should be foregone. I talked a lot about the busway once upon a time. That's a piece of history now, but it's costing us nearly $20 million a year in subsidies, plus over $100 million in bonding, state money that we have to pay back, plus everything else that was spent. Okay, that's history. One of the things I've been focusing on to some extent recently in kind of the redcoats are wanting to warn people before it happens, is that there's going to be a proposal to put big new money into the Hartford Civic Center, possibly as much as $2 billion to blow up the existing Civic Center and build a new one. And I want to raise the issue now before the proposal comes. That's the kind of thing we can't afford, and I don't think it's even a good idea if we could afford it. That's a different argument. So forego big expensive projects that we just, they're dubious, but even if they're not dubious, we can't afford it right now. It's like saying, I need a new roof, but I don't have the money. I got to wait till next year. The second thing we have to do is look at existing state programs that can be drastically reduced or eliminated. One of them I've talked about, I think, with you before is the Board of Regents for Higher Education. Dan, they got 140 people who are costing the state on the average $160,000 each. Not a single one of them teaches a student, counsels a student, even has anything to do with a student. They are peer bureaucrats who are not connected with any given college. The colleges could all function on their own. This is a bureaucracy that exists over the four regional universities and the community college. I think if they all disappeared, it would be weeks before anyone would know that they were gone. The third thing then is to go to the agency and department heads and ask them to find reductions. And I wouldn't do it with an across-the-board cut, you know, this everyone cuts 5.75 or whatever. I think you have to look at the agencies both in terms of their significance, their importance in the great scheme of things, and also the potential they have for savings. So maybe in law enforcement or public safety, the cut would not be as dramatic as it might be in culture and tourism, for instance. But we have to, those people are managers, and they should be expected to find savings. If I were in a position, that is the approach I would take, a kind of a threefold approach. But like I said, every year that we fail to do this, the job is getting tougher.
Well, and these are problems that the state can no longer put off. They're being confronted left and right with these problems. And you know, Senator, another issue is going to be the municipalities, particularly Hartford and New Haven and Bridgeport. They're all begging for regionalism, and Hartford needs a bailout. How would you handle that? Because they're going to have to come before the state legislature.
Well, you know what I would say, which is no. And again, I think that sometimes the best thing you can do for people is to give them clarity, not to say, you know, let's come on in next session and we'll talk about it, but to say, do not count on the state to get you out of this fix. Of course, so much of this fix is going to be involved with the ridiculous stadium that they decided to build and the fiasco that followed from that. And the cities have a lot of problems, and we have to help the cities solve the problems. The problem in the cities is that there's no employment. The cities only exist because they were once centers of employment, centers of industry. And, you know, I mean, they were the Silver City and the Insurance City and the Hat City. They all had their big businesses. All of them are gone. All that's left is the name. And you really can't have a city that works unless it has real industry that gives people a chance. What do you do to get that? The same thing you do as a state, which is you have to create a climate that's favorable to business. It isn't looking at business to say, how much can we squeeze out of them? But to say, come here, there's workers, there's low taxes, there's stability, and there's safety. Come to our city. And that doesn't necessarily cost money, but it takes political will.
You know, one of my fears, Senator, and we all know that what helps to drive up these municipal budgets are these unfunded mandates imposed by the state on these municipalities. But if the state actually woke up and decided to cut back on some of these mandates, then the state or these municipalities would be sued.
Well, the unfunded mandates, it's funny that everyone running for office says, I'm against mandates. And I'm against them, funded or unfunded. I think that we should be mandating. I think that the communities are very different in Connecticut. And even within my district, it's very different communities. And the solutions for each community are going to be...
Senator, we're losing you. Could you...
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh,
there you go. That's better.
the differences are great, and the solutions are different. And we ought to let them find their own solutions. The trouble is you get into office, and they say, gee, wouldn't it be nice if everybody had to do X. And you say, yeah, that sounds good, but it's not our job. Let the towns and cities decide themselves how they're going to go about what they're going to do for their kids. Nobody cares more about students than local school boards. We don't have to sit in Hartford to tell people to be concerned about our young people.
A lot of problems indeed. But, Senator, thanks very much for sharing some of your thoughts with our audience today.
Anytime, Dan. It's always a pleasure to be with you.